and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, former Anchorage mayors Jack Roderick, Tony Knowles, Tom Fink, Rick Maestrom, and Dan Sullivan discuss the city's past, present, and future in a panel discussion, Coffee with the Mayors. Their discussion, part of the Anchorage Centennial Symposium, was recorded on June 20th at the Anchorage Museum and was moderated by Cook Inlet Historical Society Vice President Judy Bittner. And now, Coffee with the Mayors.
During your tenure of mayor, Mr. Roderick, what were some of the most challenging problems, opportunities, or issues that your administration faced?
We had a city for 40 years until we had a constitutional convention, at which time they said there will only be two local governments, cities and boroughs. Then in 64, earthquake year, the legislature passed a bill forming four boroughs, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, Kenai, and Anchorage. And a borough is an area-wide government. It performs duties or services inside the city and outside the city. Think about that. That's important. And the mandatory powers that the Anchorage, Greater Anchorage Area Borough was given were all schools, education, all taxation, levying and collecting it, and all land use. When I got elected, it was obvious to me, at least, that how people use their land determines how a community will be. My predecessor, John Asplin, a great guy, was the chairman of the Spinard Public Utility District, and when he became chairman, first called chairman, it became mayor, he concentrated on sewers, extending the sewers outside the city, and he did it. Took him a long time. As you know, the facility out there at Point Wyandotte is named for John. But when I came in, it seemed to me land was the important thing and transportation. So we did start the People Mover during my administration. The voters had given us the health power, and we started the emergency medical facility. We did a lot of great things. But the one I think that I can, well, two. One, I started community councils. And I happen to be a great believer that democracy works if people get involved. And how better to get involved than in your neighborhood? I took that idea from the mayor of Portland, whose name I've forgotten now, became governor. And so I brought it up here, and sort of to my surprise, the assembly passed it. But we also did the first comprehensive land use plan in Alaska, in Anchorage. And that was a big deal. 45 public hearings, people get involved, and they're still involved. I don't want to be too philosophic here. I'll wait for these guys, these practical politicians next to me here, to talk about their experience. But no, Anchorage is a vital place still. People are involved. You can make a difference. You can talk about, you know, because our remoteness, and we don't have any great wealth, established wealth in our community. A lot of reasons, but it still is. People like it here, or they wouldn't live here, and they are involved. So maybe I'll quit there and turn it over to more practical guys. I think if I look back, if I knew then what I knew now, know now, I might not have taken this job because the conflict was extreme. Of 11-member assembly, 5 were appointed from the city council. So everything that we wanted to do at the borough to expand our power, so to speak, 5 votes against from the beginning. So it was rough. It was a rough 10 years, and we weathered it, and we did unify in 1975, one community. And of course, it's interesting to me that when the voters were asked, what should we call this? City, a borough, or a municipality? Overwhelmingly, we became a municipality. I don't think the pipeline was beginning, new people, and I think they were a little tired of the politics too. So that's mine. Okay. That's my story.
I'll pass the mic over to Mayor Knowles.
Good morning, everybody, and what a pleasure to be here, and a real honor to be here with current and former mayors. In 1981, when I became mayor, it was exciting times, far different in many ways from when Jack was mayor of the borough. And it was an exciting time to be in public service. Anchorage had changed from a kind of a modest, slowly growing city to one of the fastest growing city in the nation with populations over 100,000. We had about 125,000 people when I came into office. And when I left 6 years later, it was 250,000 people. Incredible growth. What an excitement, but also what a challenge. One of the real blessings was the fact that with the discovery of Prudhoe Bay and the state's ownership of that oil, that we had the revenues, and that just doesn't happen very often. So there was no excuse for not doing it right, and that was the challenge that the new municipality had. How would we do it right? Well, we'd started a comprehensive land use process. Mayor George Sullivan, who was elected as the first mayor of the unified municipality, with the development of extending services all over the municipality. There was, with the state giving an enormous windfall of capital money to build things, he and the assembly put together Project 80s, and we're sitting in one of the parts of Project 80s, which outlined a really bold plan of cultural and community facilities that we just didn't have, or what we had were very small replicas, and certainly something that we would want to have if we were going to be a major community. The people of Anchorage supported that with a big vote, overwhelmingly supporting, and so when I came into office, we had the money, we had projects. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is always is how can you do it right? And doing it right means public safety, public health, quality of life, and what kind of city were we becoming? We were racked for years of determining where the capital in Alaska was going to be. And lots of people were all caught up in the conversation of, well, should the capital be in Anchorage? And then they wanted it in Willow, and we just moved. And there was a new vision, though, as that was turned down at the polls, of Anchorage as a headquarters city. A headquarters city, potentially, for all of the resource development companies that were involved in Alaska's oil and gas industry, as well as mining. The new native corporations, a major economic player, would have their headquarters here. An education headquarters with a new University of Alaska, vibrant University of Alaska, and an APU to join hands. A medical center. We were the center for Alaska Native Medical Center in the 80s, by the federal government, a expanding Providence and Alaska Regional. We were the headquarters of engineers, finance, commerce, and that all depended on quality of life, was that growth. And I'll close this part out by saying that in meeting that challenge, I knew that we needed the basics. We needed a water supply system, a Klutna, a landfill. We needed to expand the sewers. We needed to also, in terms of quality of life, with trails and parks and those additions. There were two awards we got while I served as mayor of the municipality. All-American City Awards by the National Conference of Mayors. The first award was for a neighborhoods, the planning process that we used and the involvement on how we could be America's fastest growing city and at the same time still have a quality of life and a protection of neighborhoods. And the second award was for the Brother Francis Shelter, when we were one of the very first communities in America to face the homeless, the growing homeless situation, particularly with the closing down of institutionalization of people with mental illness. What do we do? And we responded with a public-private partnership with the Catholic Services and with Catholic Social Services and some wonderful people like John Franklin and Archbishop Hurley to provide one of the first homeless shelters in America for a large city. So the fact that we were awarded for people with homes and without homes, I think tells a lot about the character of our community and what we move forward with to the great city I think that we have become.
Thank you, thank you. I'll go on to Mayor Fink, please.
Well, my story is a little bit different. What happened when I became mayor is sort of what happened now. The price of oil went, I think, from $30 down to $8. And we had terrible fiscal problems. The assessed valuation of the city went down 40% during the time I was there. We, at one time, were 12,000 people fewer than when I came into office. So our problem was, how do I maintain the city and maintain the services and help people get by? A lot of foreclosures. 8 banks statewide went under. I had a rather hectic time. I didn't want taxes to go up. Well, if you ever looked at a schedule, city budgets, taxes, you'll see it. It's always going up like this. It does that, except the 6 years I was mayor, it was flat. I determined we weren't going to raise taxes. We weren't going to raise the budget. We were going to live within what we had. Well, you can imagine the difficulties of that. I mean, the government believes that staying even means you've got to grow a little, you know, for inflation or whatever improvements. And I said, no, we're not. Department budgets, I got some great department heads. I said, you've got to live within the money that we're going to allot you, which is the same amount you had last year. So, of course, the immediate big problem were labor contracts that were in force when I became mayor, and they would have required the budget to go up. So I had a big battle, a big public battle in the newspaper. I caught hell every day. Police department, whatever it was, I said, you know, I really would like to keep wages where they are, but if we don't keep them where they are, there are going to be fewer policemen. And that was true with every department. As I say, I on that most sensitive area that I caught the most pressure on, but we printed and distributed the city payroll. And once the public saw what the city payroll was, what the pay was, all of a sudden, I no longer got a lot of flack. People became supportive of trying to live within our income. I vetoed more legislation than all prior mayors. I had more vetoes overridden than all prior mayors. I had more vetoes sustained than all prior mayors. The Assembly and I were doing a lot of fighting, but I thought it was healthy. I think it's healthy. You have three branches of government, you have disputes. But my goal was, and I think what I was able to do, was to get the city through 6 years of trying to get back to normal economic conditions, because they were drastic. I had been in the legislature back in the late 60s and early 70s, and that was the time when oil money first started, in 68, and we started giving money to local governments, and they got in the habit of living on it, as they should. Well, when the price of oil went down, that all was cut back. The Project 80s, that big state money, all that came to a screeching halt. It was a very interesting time. I really enjoyed it, even though I caught hell. I was an attempt at recall. I don't know if they didn't get the signatures. It seems to me they might have said they had the signatures, but they decided not to turn them in. But anyway, it was dropped at the end of the period. As a matter of fact, I was in, I think that was a trip to Seoul, where Rick was trying to get us to the Olympics a couple of years in the future. And we landed at the Anchorage International Airport, got over to the gate, and they announced, would everybody please keep their seats, because Mayor Fink, there's a group to meet Mayor Fink as he gets off the plane. And when I got off the plane, what they told me was they dropped the recall. That was a pleasant way to get home. Our economy, you know, we fought through it and all that and barely got by. But what really got us by was the Exxon Valdez spill. That brought the economy back. Everything to straighten out Valdez and the spill was all located in Anchorage, or the headquarters of Mozambique, I guess, at that time. And that's really what brought the economy back. I can say this now, I couldn't say it publicly before, but in the subsequent year or so, when we wanted the economy to improve a little, we'd said, you know, a spill in Cook Inlet would be pretty nice. But I never said that publicly before. Then we had another good contest. I was just reminded of Jim Barnett when I came in here. I tried to sell ATU. And at that, you know, it really should have been sold that time. We had $500 million for it, and the public turned it down. And in the subsequent years, Rick sold it for considerably less, but he got the best price he could. But nevertheless, Mr. Barnett and various others and I were fighting rather strongly over the sale of ATU. Then we had the Hill Building renovation. We had to move out in the temporary quarters at Northern Lights and Sea, and then various places all over the city where we could put the people. And the building was renovated, and we got a new lease. And again, the public wasn't aware of that, but we were awfully close to getting booted out of that building. We couldn't come to terms. I did make a trip down to California to talk to the manager, and we finally made a deal, and they redid the Hill Building. That's enough. Thanks.
Here, former Anchorage Mayor Rick Meistrom responds to the question, what were some of the most challenging problems, opportunities, or issues your administration faced?
When we were outside in the lobby, Tony asked me, said, well, gosh, with only five mayors there, how are we going to keep busy talking for an hour and a half? And I said, Tony, don't worry. You know, no problems at all. Now, when I took over in 1994 after Mayor Fink as mayor, and actually the city was in pretty darn good financial conditions. Tom had done a good job of keeping costs down, as he explained to you, and we had reserves and all the appropriate balances. And so I didn't have the financial problems I know that Mayor Sullivan had when he first took over, and other mayors have had when they took over. So it was easier for me to really focus on things that I wanted to do and I thought were important to Anchorage and what I had campaigned on. And my focus was on a cleaner, safer, more attractive city. And that was what my intent and what my purpose and what my goals were. The very first week I was in office, though, And what Anchorage really needed was a sense of sort of new pride, because when you're just trying to cut back all the time, it's very tough for the city to be really proud of itself. Tom did the right thing at the right time, I think, but it needed a sense of rejuvenation and new spirit. And my first week in office, Dan Cuddy walked into my office, and he didn't walk in, he's had an appointment, and he said, "Mr. Mayor," he said, I wanted to tell you personally that First National Bank is moving its headquarters out of downtown Anchorage. And I said, "Dan, I'm sorry to hear that. Why are you doing that?" And he said, "Well," and these were his exact words in 1994. He said, "Downtown is dying, and it will be dead in 5 years." And I realized then, all of a sudden, I was seeing the first evidence of what could happen to downtown. And I raised that up on my to-do list of things, and that is the revitalization of downtown. Didn't know exactly how I was going to do it, but I found an answer in Portland and Winnipeg, Saskatchewan. I was at a Northern Conference of Northern Mayors in October of 1994, when I first got into office. And we were driving, the mayor, Sue Thompson of Winnipeg, was driving mayors through Winnipeg. And it was a dreary October day, dark, wet, the snow was not on the ground yet. But we saw ahead of us this little four square block area of light and activity and people moving and businesses active. This was about 8 o'clock at night. And we drove into it, and she said, "This is a business improvement district in Winnipeg." And we drove through it and kind of looked at it, and you could just see things happening there. And then we drove out of it, and Winnipeg got dark again. Another mile or so, we hit another business improvement district. This one was a little bit bigger. Lights and activity and people out and doing things. Businesses seemed to be prosperous. And so I learned about this business improvement district there, and also went down to Portland, talked with Mayor Katz down there about a business improvement district, and took a number of business leaders with me. And a group of, well, I decided then I wanted to form a business improvement district. We made the business improvement district the whole of downtown, from L Street to the Ingra Street, going all the way from 9th Avenue to 2nd Avenue. All became one big business improvement district. And a group of business people, led by Larry Cash and a number of others, we worked every night, every Tuesday and Thursday night for about a month and a half to promote it to the downtown businesses, because we were going to increase taxes on the downtown businesses. The city was going to get could only be the one that collected taxes. We collected the tax and gave 100% of it back to what would have to be a nonprofit corporation to improve downtown. And that became the Downtown Partnership. And as a result of that, we began to really improve downtown Anchorage, or downtown really, really started growing. And in fact, I've had the owners of Orso and Glacier Brewhouse, Chris Anderson and John, oh, I forget what John's last name is, but the owners there said they would have never done that if it hadn't been for the Business Improvement District and the improving downtown. So we've got a good, vibrant downtown. We still need more. We need people living downtown. And that was my goal, but that's a long time coming. But with prosperity, downtown is ready to have people living there. The other big issue I faced was crime. Crime was up. It was growing. And I knew, and I set forth a goal when I was first there. I said, my goal is to reduce crime by 50%, to cut it in half. And to do that, we formed a community action plan on crime, and we had everybody from the head of corrections to the head of the school district, and I wish Mayor Berkowitz were here and could hear the story, but I'll tell it to him. Head of the school district, head of prisons, head of the state troopers, police department, anybody that was involved at all with crime, being impacted by crime. We had defense lawyers, we had prosecuting lawyers. It was about 50 people we had, and put together a community action plan on crime that later the police chiefs called the best crime prevention program in America. Also, we cleaned up the city. I mean, there was a lot of graffiti all around. We got rid of graffiti. We made a promise to people, you call within 24 hours, we'll have the graffiti gone. And it was a challenge, but we did it. We got rid of graffiti. The gangs were starting to move in, according to newspaper articles. We were able to do that. We got rid of 9,000 junk cars. 9,000 junk cars in Anchorage in Operation Clean Sweep. So it really cleaned up the city, and that helped. But I think as much as anything else, the long-term project that we were able to put together that I think helped really reduce crime and will help in the long-term future to reduce crime as bridge builders. We put together a program to really move and integrate all our minority groups into city government and into the city, and just, you know, for people from Asia, from the Philippines, from Samoa, from Tonga, from South America, from, you know, all of the different groups of people, for them to be in touch with the mayor is a big, big deal and made them feel like they're really part of the city. And I remember Elsa Sargento, who was a Filipino, saying to me, she said, "Mayor, I've lived here 37 years, or I've been a school teacher here for 20 years, and this is the first time I've really felt like I'm part of Anchorage." And people over and over have said that. So I think that's really going to make a big difference in the long run. So that was what I faced. I had a good start because Mayor Fink kept the cost down. I stole a little bit from Mayor Knowles. He talked a lot about quality of life, and I focused a lot on quality of life. My quality of life was safer, more attractive, cleaner, more attractive, with more recreational opportunities. And I think we were able to leave the city in pretty good shape. So, Mayor Sullivan.
Well, thank you very much, my fellow mayors. It's been an honor just to be at the table with this august group. And, you know, Isaac Newton said one time, if I've seen further than other men, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. And we have some giants for our community here. And I've learned something from every single one of them, including obviously some who aren't here, including my father. When I was 16 years old, he was elected mayor. He was mayor till I was 30 years old. They didn't have term limits in those days, and I'd probably be running against him today Dad, my turn, come on. But when they did unify the city and the borough, they did put in the two-term limit for mayors, which for me is a very bittersweet moment because, you know, I think every mayor would say that we love our job. When you get the opportunity every single day to do something to help your community, that really is something pretty special. And so in 10 days, I'll be transitioning to something else, and the next mayor is going to do a great job. We're going to help him because his success is Anchorage's success. When I came into office, of course, now over the course of my term, unlike Mayor Fink, I've had no labor problems whatsoever. That's all been pretty pretty low-key. But I faced a very similar challenge. As we know, in 2008, the world went into the worst recession in 70 years. Anchorage was in a very unusual and unfortunate situation where expenses were rising dramatically, partly because of recently passed labor contracts. At the same time, revenues were clearly declining. And that created a gap that could only be taken care of through some immediate and very strong measures, which we had to implement because, quite frankly, the city budget has to balance. There's no question about it. And when we came into office, we realized the operating reserves of the city had been depleted. So we immediately asked every department head, you're going to have to work with us as a team. We're going to have to sacrifice to make this city back to be fiscally stable again. And quite frankly, they responded. And today, if you look at where, and we came into office, the campaign promises we're going to do four things. We're going to restore the fiscal stability of the city. We're going to get the crime trend going the right direction, which is down, as Mayor Maestro mentioned. We're going to invest in our infrastructure. We're not going to build new buildings. We're essentially going to take care of those assets we have today. And we need more reliable energy security because Cook Inlet had gone from having the cheapest natural gas in the nation to literally overnight becoming a question of deliverability of natural gas. So the first thing was, again, the fiscal health of the city. Today, the city is one of the strongest cities financially in America. We have a AAA bond rating. There's Standard & Poor's rates about 4,000 cities in America. Only 300 or so have a AAA bond rating. Anchorage, Alaska is one of them. Because not only did we tighten the belt and make sure that things were being spent effectively and efficiently, we reorganized, we put services online, and the result is that not only do we have adequate reserves now, we raised the bar on what reserves are. Instead of 8%, they're now 10% of your expenses have to be held in reserve, plus a 2% emergency reserve, and this is what the bond rating agencies look to. What are your fiscal policies, not just 1 year, but long-term policies? So we can say today with great pride that we are one of the strongest cities financially in America. Very proud of that. The other thing that really was of concern to me coming into office was the energy security. We'd had a number of pretty cold winters where because the major producers were no longer active like they were, the Marathons and the Chevrons. They were shutting wells down. They were moving off to other plays around the world. And literally, there was not enough gas under contract to the utilities, and, you know, NSTAR and the electric utilities, to make sure that on one of those days where it's 10 or 15 below zero in February, there was enough gas under contract to supply the needs of South Central Alaska. So we went to work. I formed an energy task force on day one. The task force did a couple things. First, we started doing drills to make sure that we were prepared if there was a disruption. And keep in mind, if there's a disruption in natural gas in Anchorage, Alaska, the gas utility has to restart homes one by one by one. You cannot have that happen in a city of now over 300,000 people. So the tabletop exercises identified who would be responsible for what, where the priorities would be, what services and or big buildings would be shut down, which have their own generators that could come into play. And so all that was great. We also went on TV and informed consumers there's things you can do to help. Turn down the thermostat. Don't use your major appliances. You can save 5 to 6, 7% of natural gas use. That could save the day. But most importantly, we worked with the legislature and the governor, and in 2010, a year after we got into office, they passed landmark legislation that created gas storage down at the Kenai Peninsula and incentives for production and exploration in Cook Inlet, and those have been extremely effective. What gas storage does is in the summer, nobody uses natural gas. You don't use your lights as much. You certainly don't heat your home as much. But producers still want to sell gas somewhere because that's what the business they're in to do. So now they have a place to sell their gas. They sell it into the gas storage facility. Then in the winter, when it gets really cold, the utilities can draw from that gas storage and have reliability because you know you can keep the pressure up. So the other bill, creating incentives for both exploration and production, has been an amazing result. There are now a dozen new players in Cook Inlet that we had never heard of before, the Nordax, the Cook Inlet Energies, the Hillcorps, Buccaneer and Fury and Apache, and all these independents are now out there being very active in Cook Inlet, and guess what? They're finding lots of oil and lots of gas. Oil production alone in Cook Inlet since the incentive is up 80%. It just goes to show credits do work, and in Cook Inlet they've made the difference because we now have reliability. You know, when you flip that switch or turn that thermostat, we've just taken to granted that it'll always work. And it got to a point where that was not a certainty, but we're in a much better energy security place today than we were just 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm very proud of the efforts there with the task force and our legislature and governor responding to those. We actually went on TV and we scared people a little bit, and they tell me to get things done in the legislature, you have to create an emotion, and fear's a pretty good one. It worked pretty well, so that was good. The other thing is we were fortunate during the first 5 years of my administration where the price of oil was, you know, over $100, which meant we were very successful in getting capital grants for rejuvenating Anchorage's facilities. The facilities that my father and Tony Knowles were able to build, the Lusac Library, the Sullivan Arena, the Egan Center, the Performing Arts Center, the museum, the hockey rinks, you know, those were all getting to be 30 years old, and we had the opportunity to get over $800 million between local bonds and state grants, and all of those facilities are being revitalized. And whether it's the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail, where 7 miles have been repaved and rejuvenated, or this year the Laney Fleischer Chester Creek Trail, to every one of our major facilities, we've had a chance to renew them. And that's the next generation will now be able to enjoy those facilities like we've been able to enjoy them, and that's a good story as well. And then just finally on crime, you know, because of budget concerns, we've not been able to, you know, expand as what people think the police department workforce should be. As Mayor Fink said, when you make employees more expensive, you can't have as many of them. So we're gradually working our way back to getting to where we want to be with community policing. We have 2 police academies this year. We had 2 last year. And we're getting to a very, very strategic increase in our public safety force. You can't do it all at once because, again, it's very costly and you're under a limited budget. But we're getting there. But the good news is the 5-year crime average during my 5 years, 15 won't be known until next year, crime is down compared to the previous 5 years. That's the kind of trend you want. 5 of the 7 Part 1 crime categories are down compared to the previous 5 years. So you hear some, you know, sometimes very startling, there's a spurt in shootings or crime, and those are very, you know, sometimes people think, gosh, we're going to heck in a handbasket. But again, the bottom line is we're a pretty darn safe city. Chief Mew has said on numerous occasions, if you're not involved in drugs or abusing alcohol, your chance to be involved in a violent crime in Anchorage are actually pretty low. So we're a safe city, we're a clean city, we're a strong city. And one of the things that you look at to say, you know, how do you know this is true, is you look what people outside Anchorage are saying about Anchorage. Forbes, Kiplinger.com have both named Anchorage one of the top 10 cities in America to live, work, and play. Top 10 cities in the entire country. That's a heck of an honor. And these are, you know, obviously very well-respected organizations. And they look at about 50 criteria: your air quality, your parks per capita, your foreclosure rates, your job opportunity, all those different things. And we're ranking right up there with the best of the best. So been very proud to be a part of that over the last 6 years. Also very proud to be the mayor during the centennial. We've got our little centennial mugs here today, but a very unique history for 100 years of Anchorage. And I hope you get out and enjoy some of the centennial events over the next couple of weeks. Thanks.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans with former Anchorage mayors Jack Roderick, Tony Knowles, Tom Fink, Rick Maestrom, and Dan Sullivan. The event, Coffee with the Mayors, was presented as part of the Anchorage Centennial Symposium and was recorded June 20th at the Anchorage Museum. Cook Inlet Historical Society Vice President Judy Bittner served as moderator. Former Mayor Knowles was next to speak.
If I might just mention just a couple of very short stories about how, and you've heard a little bit about what we have faced as mayors and what we tried to accomplish, but how important it is just for the other leaders in the community to be part of a team, and that's where you really get things done. And I know with Rick Maestrom, one of the things while I was mayor, and we were just about, well, we were in the crash that happened in 1987, and I think Tom Fink, one, he really was facing with a really difficult problem, and he never blamed me for it. At least that I heard. But he really did have to face it. But one of the things that happened to Anchorage in the mid-80s was Rick Maestrom, as a private citizen, as a leader, came up with the idea that Anchorage should have the Winter Olympics. And it just set this community on fire. Everybody was depressed and down. And talk about a unification of the city. We didn't know, and I'll say this, we didn't know how corrupt the IOC is in terms of its selection and its problems and the problems with all the professionals. But we were so naive and so enthusiastic, put together a great program on what Anchorage could be and could do. And it was one of the really, it was not just an emotional, it meant a lot to the community in terms of, and we came very close, but it was something that was, I think, important. And as a mayor, I was so thankful that a leader like Rick stood forward. Homeless, John Franklin, who was my public safety commissioner, fire chief, he came to me in the winter, the very first year that I was in office, and he said, Mr. Mayor, he said, there's a demonstration going on and a sleep-in taking place in the Park Strip. I said, what? He said, the homeless. I said, oh, can I say to him, well, are the police doing anything about it? He said, Mr. Mayor, I'm an alcoholic. I know many of those homeless people are alcohol abusers, have mental health problems. They need our compassion. And I said, well, okay. He said, we have to get a place for them to stay. So there was an apartment building downtown on 4th Avenue that was basically abandoned, just a two-story building. And he said, I think that we can move them into there. He said, unfortunately, the fire code and also, you know, the community and so forth, they may have a problem. But the fact is they can't sleep there because they don't have a sprinkler system. So he said, but I think that somebody can go wake them up before the inspector comes in the evening so that they'll all be awake when he's there so that we won't at least violate the code. And so began the concept of that as a city we had a responsibility. And it was happening nationwide and no one had any model that we could go to. And so There were actually two Jesuit brothers that came up with the idea that we could move into an old city building, and we looked at MLNP, had some land down there where the Brother Francis Shelter now is, and then we set about on a more permanent basis getting a HUD grant to build a Brother Francis Shelter. It was a wonderful combination of Beans Cafe and Brother Francis Shelter. The community really came around to it. John Franklin was the hero in that. On Eklutna, on the landfill. Landfill used to be at Merrill Field, and it was full. And as a matter of fact, you could drive by it, and you knew it was full. We needed a new landfill. All the experts said, we'll do it out in Sand Lake. Well, Sand Lake had just had all the gravel pits for years and years, and the neighbors were just screaming about these gravel trucks. And I said, you know how long I will last if the next load of trucks coming in has garbage? I said, we got to get something new. Somebody suggested, well, we go to the Army, Fort Richardson, and we'll get some, they got a lot of land out there, so we'll get something in Fort Richardson. I said, great idea. So I went out and I got an appointment with the commanding general, and, he was a major general and had a chest full of decorations, and he looked at me when I said, we'd like to have a landfill out here on your fort, and can we work something out? And he said, Mr. Mayor, I'm infantry. And in the infantry, we take land, we don't give it. So I said, okay, I was just a Spec 5 in the Army. So I said, well, okay. So I went to an ally, Senator Ted Stevens, who at that time was head of the Military Appropriations Committee. And I laid out my issue to him, and he said, absolutely. He said, it just makes a whole lot of sense. So he then arranged, he said, can you stay over today? I'm going to call over a Undersecretary of the Army to come in, and we'll get it fixed. And so I said, well, yeah, I'd like to. So the next day I came by and was just, it was like a fly on the wall. And I listened to the undersecretary come in, and he never sat down in the entire thing. He was standing, and Ted didn't officially lock his heels, but they were locked. And he said, this general that we have is not being cooperative at all, and I'd like to see if we can't get some discussions going on to getting land for the city. And the secretary, undersecretary, said, no, these are some issues and rules we have. And Senator Stevens said, undersecretary, I don't think you heard me. He said, if you would like to conduct a number of public hearings throughout the rest of this year in Anchorage as to why you can't help that community meet its needs, you better get your ticket. And about a week later, we got word that two things. One, the Major General had retired. And number two, we were going to get some land. So when Ted Stevens came back that year, we met with him with a parade of garbage trucks at the airport for Christmas. And we gave him, at that time it was an orange suit, now they wear orange suits, probably on public service duty, but at that time we gave him an orange suit and had a parade for him, and it really worked. Final story, Coastal Trail. It was actually on the ballot. Mayor Sullivan and community leaders had said, this is something that's important. We need to have it as part of the projects that we're going to build. And it was part of the ballot that passed. When I got in to office, the deck was stacked against it. Number one, the Department of Transportation said, no, we're going to build a Tidewater Freeway. That's our goal, and that's what we're going to do. So they finally decided they couldn't do that thanks to the AMATS work, and that, no, we didn't want that. So that was done. I went to see the head of the railroad, the federal government owned the railroad, And he said, the answer is not only no, but never. Well, then fortunately, the state bought the railroad. And then the landowners, some of them very influential in the community, said, we don't want something that's going to bring a lot of people down to near our homes, and didn't feel like they would be completely safe. But the people of Anchorage really spoke out on it and were able to get it done. And Mayor Sullivan here suggested, talked about the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail, but Jim Barnett was on the assembly when that happened, and he's the one that dropped it on the table one night that it be named Tony Knowles, and there, and there it was right at the end of my second term, and relations are always, as Mayor Fink has mentioned, sometimes iffy with the assembly. Fred Dyson looked over and said, well, I don't think we should name anything after somebody who's living. And he looked over at me and says, how bad do you want it?
Here, moderator Judy Bittner asks of the former mayors where they see the city of Anchorage in the next 100 years. Jack Roderick was first to respond.
Well, my look at 100 years from now, I see people coming to Anchorage, getting into nice hotels wherever they are, getting on their skis or on their bikes or on their feet, and walking into those Chugach Mountains. That's wilderness, folks. If people want wilderness, we can take advantage of that. And of course, ideally, it'd be marvelous if the military could move somewhere else and we could have all that land over there for our, but that's a dream.
Here, former Mayor Tom Fink responds to the question of what the future may look like for Anchorage.
Since I'm not a young man, I've been around for many, many years, and most cities in the country progress and become more pleasant. They don't all do. I mean, some become horror stories, and that could even happen to Anchorage. I would expect that Anchorage will continue to grow. I mean, one of the things different about Anchorage than most of the cities in the United States is we have a big influx, a lot of people that want to move to Alaska, and for generally for very good reasons. They're entrepreneurs. I came up here right out of college, because that's for statehood. New opportunities, great place to fish and hunt and develop. But anyway, people come for different reasons now. Some, unfortunately, come for a dividend. But I'm generally confident in Anchorage. I'm generally confident in the United States that we'll continue to grow and expand. And even though I've lived here, 60-some years, you really don't know. I mean, I guess I feel very, very positive about Anchorage. Do I feel very positive about the world? No, I don't. So I shouldn't even bring that up. Anchorage will continue to grow, but we've had people who came here because they wanted to be here, and they wanted to develop, and they wanted to have the opportunity to expand and improve their situation. And to live free.
Here, former Mayor Rick Maestrom addresses the question of what the future may look like for Anchorage.
Well, this is a fascinating question. What's Anchorage going to be like the balance of this century? What should it be like? How should the city look 85 years from now? And to understand that and to talk about it, I think we need to take a quick look back at what's made cities successful in each of the past four generations, each of the past four centuries leading up to right now. So think about American cities in the 1700s. There weren't many, but an American community or an American town could not be successful unless it was near a port, unless it had tidewater, unless it was accessible to the ocean. There weren't any cities in America over 1,000 people in the 1700s that didn't have some access to the ocean. And in the 1800s, and you can always look at one single characteristic that made cities better and more successful. So in the 1800s, it's those cities that were lucky enough or smart enough to be near a railroad or at the intersection of railroads that made those cities prosper and made them successful. And that was the dominant characteristic of the 1800s that made cities successful. You look at the 1900s, and what made cities prosperous in the, I'm sorry, the 1900s, the 20th century. What makes cities prosperous in the 20th century? It was only those cities that could accommodate the automobiles, with a few exceptions. New York City is one, but with few exceptions, those cities that could accommodate the automobiles are the ones that really prospered and got better. And you can argue whether or not it was a better quality of life, but that created their prosperity. So the question is, how about the 21st century? What's the mayor going to say at the end of the 21st century that made Anchorage so successful? Here's what I think she's going to say. I think she's going to look back and say, you know what made Anchorage great in the 21st century? Is the people of Anchorage understood that in the early 21st century, the people of Anchorage understood that more and more people could live wherever they wanted. They didn't have to live next to their customers. They didn't have to live next to their employers. They didn't have to live in groups near factories. They could live more and more and more whatever they wanted. So what's going to be the driving economic force for any successful cities? And the future belongs to those cities who understand this. What's going to be the driving force for the success of any city in the 21st century is to create a wonderful quality of life, a great environment, great recreational opportunities, a great school system, a clean city, an attractive city, a safe city. Those are the things that are going to be a driving economic force and is going to determine the safest city, or determine the successful cities of the 21st century. And I think that for the first time now, we understand, and we should understand, and the mayors of Anchorage have got to understand, if we're going to be that successful, that the environment and the attractiveness of the city is going to be an economic development force for Anchorage in the 21st century. And I think the future belongs to those cities that understand it, and I think if Anchorage can embrace that, the future will belong to Anchorage. Thank you.
And now, former Mayor Dan Sullivan talks about what he sees for the future of Anchorage.
Well, thank you, Rick, and thank you, fellow mayors. I don't disagree with anything that's been said. I think Anchorage is poised to be one of the great international cities of the world. If you look at our position geopolitically and you look at who Alaska as a whole trades with and interacts with, I mean, our trade is with Japan and China and Taiwan and you know, the Pacific Rim and Korea. I mean, these are the people that Alaska associates with economically. So at some point, I think Anchorage will continue to grow to be a great international city if we do several things moving forward. One is we will need to learn to control our flying cars. We want to make sure that the flying cars can all be well managed because, hey, 100 years from now, you know, that's quite a possibility. You think traffic's bad now, what will they get up about 100 feet? But the other thing is that, as Rick mentioned, quality of life is certainly important. And one of the things that I think distinguishes great cities, and you look all over the world and you look at the great iconic cities of the world, is a truly developed waterfront. And we just developed the Ship Creek Master Plan. It was approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission, by the Assembly. It's now an official plan of the city to develop a true waterfront for Anchorage because, as the architects that worked on the plan said, we're a city on the water with no waterfront. We're on the Pacific Ocean here, folks, and we've got one of the most underdeveloped waterfronts of any metropolitan city of 300,000 plus people. So we've got this tremendous opportunity with the railroad holdings down there, and they're anxious to develop those holdings. Mr. Blassingame's here, and he'll nod his head on this. But you know, there's significant acreage down there, and also more acreage that could be created by infill into Cook Inlet to really get Anchorage out onto that waterfront experience, past the mudflats a little bit with, you know, the Sleeping Lady, the Mount Susitna, iconic view to the west, and back to the east, the cityscape with the Chugach Mountains behind it. We could develop something truly iconic, symbolic, that when anybody comes up Cook Inlet or flies into Anchorage, they'll see that amazing waterfront symbol that says, that's Anchorage, Alaska, and it'll be recognized as something truly significant internationally. Again, this is our position in the world. It's who we deal with economically. And I think it's time for Anchorage to start embracing the fact that we could truly be a great international city. The Ship Creek Master Plan is a generational plan. Those things don't happen overnight. But over a 100-year period, it could well be developed into something that would be just amazingly significant. And it takes small steps to start. And we've started it with my administration. And the next administrations going forward will have that challenge. Can you truly convert the waterfront of Anchorage into something amazing? we've got that potential. I think the other thing is you're going to see Anchorage become a more vertical city. As we all know, the Anchorage Bowl is running out of developable land, and what you do when that happens is you tend to go up. It's a challenge because going up is expensive, and when you've got people going to the Mat-Su Valley for significant acreage for the same price as a condo that's a third of the square footage, it takes a certain economic climate to make that successful. But Anchorage has that economic climate. We're blessed that, as was mentioned, we're the headquarters city, between Jay Bear and the port and the airport and the UMed district. We're very diversified. I think that's going to carry us through the next generations as well. So very, very excited about the future of Anchorage and hope to play some small part in it after being mayor. And again, thanks everyone for giving us this opportunity. It's great.
And finally, former Mayor Tony Knowles addresses the question of Anchorage's future.
I think the mayor and the former mayors here have discussed Anchorage's identification as a great city, and I think it's a very valid one. And we've talked about being mayor and government, and I was reminded thinking that there was a fellow right after unification who pretty crusty old sourdough, and I asked him, I said, what do you think about this unification? And he said, well, when we had two governments, they both gave you the runaround. And I smiled and I said, yeah. He said, but now you just have to go one place to get the runaround. And that, I think, captures a feeling that people of Alaska have towards their government. And that'd be, I hate my government, but I love my country. And that means we're always, the jury's always out when you're in elected office, and it should be. And being a mayor, being involved in local government, detail matters. If you can't fill a pothole, you don't deserve to be mayor. And that's where I see a continuum of people that really care about the things that are important, roll up their sleeves, and in a very nonpartisan way, contrary to what's so much of what's happening in this country, that we get the job done, and there's a sense of unity in this city, and pride in the city, in the municipality, and what we can be.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with former Anchorage mayors Jack Roderick, Tony Knowles, Tom Fink, Rick Maestrom, and Dan Sullivan. The event, Coffee with the Mayors, was presented as part of the Anchorage Centennial Symposium and was recorded June 20th at the Anchorage Museum. Cook Inlet Historical Society Vice President Judy Bittner served as moderator. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. Until next week, I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.